And yesterday, doctors said death could come within a matter of hours. The fighting former chief executive held his grasp on life until shortly before 9 o'clock this morning. The hospital attributed the cause of the death to, quote, complexity of organic failures causing the collapse of the cardiovascular system. Translated, that means that Mr. Truman was 88 years old. His wife, Bess Truman, and his daughter, Margaret Truman Daniel, were notified at the Truman home a short distance away in Independence. They're said to have taken the news well. Harry Truman once said that if he had his life to live over again, his only change would be an earlier marriage to his wife, Bess. Well, tonight we'll take a look at the life Mr. Truman would not have changed, and we shall talk with some of the men who knew him well. Funeral services will be Thursday in Independence, Missouri, at the Truman Library, where Mr. Truman spent much of his 20 years in retirement. Now, Harry Reasoner recalls the years since Truman left the White House.
In his 85th year, Harry Truman was still a public figure who emerged from time to time to remind us of the days when he was the commander-in-chief. In 1969, at his Florida winter retreat, he reviewed the seamen and officers of a visiting warship. He walked once again as he had walked so many times through the inspection ritual, showing the obvious pride he felt for the men of the military, paying his presidential respects as he had done so often in the waning days of World War II. He saw, this time, a whole new generation, men whose fathers, perhaps, best remembered Harry Truman and the greatness of his office. President Nixon flew to Independence, Missouri to help celebrate one of Harry Truman's birthdays. It was as simple and private a get-together as a president and ex-president might expect. There was pleasant talk about family and, of course, politics. And it was inevitable that sooner or later, Mr. Nixon and Mr. Truman would end up at the piano.
Well, I'll play something for the president. I play everything in the key of G, Mr. President. That's my ear. Let me try it out first.
The piano, of course, being no yardstick of a man's presidential acumen, ex, prospective, or otherwise. They called him the man of the people. Political rhetoric didn't suit him. He said he plain talked all his life and was not about to stop. When Harry Truman was 80, he was a guest at the National Press Club in Washington. Someone asked him, is there a Republican who would make a better president, or will there ever be one?
I'll tell you exactly what I've told all the newspaper men on that question. I've had it near every place I've had a press conference. I always tell them that I don't nominate Republicans. It's up to the Republican Party to nominate a Republican candidate for president. And I don't give a damn who they nominate. We beat the hell out of him.
Three distinguished men have come to the studio, men who have known President Truman intimately, to help talk about him and to evaluate him for us. They are Supreme Court Associate Justice William O. Douglas, who was considered instead of Truman to be vice president by Roosevelt at one time, and whom in turn President Truman wanted to be his vice presidential running mate in 1948. Arthur Kroc, long the chief of the New York Times Washington Bureau, who had exclusive interviews with President Truman in a time when interviews with presidents were more exclusive and probably more informative. Paul Porter, Washington lawyer who served the Truman administration in many positions, the most interesting one, he was the man Truman sent to Greece to make sure the Truman Doctrine was working. Gentlemen, President Truman was in the eye of many storms in his career. What do you think history will remember him most for, Justice Douglas?
That's very hard to tell. I always associated Harry Truman, a man whom I greatly loved and respected, with an earlier character in American history, President Polk. He was a countryman. He represented the middle America. The taxi drivers, the merchants, the farmers, they all understood Harry Truman. And I think he radiated that mid-America sentiment and ideology pretty much like Pope did 100 years earlier.
Arthur Kroc? I think history will emphasize more than anything else Mr. Truman's decision to drop the bomb on Japan. I happen to know that at the time that decision was made, the American military believed that had the war proceeded conventionally, we would have suffered casualties of at least 500,000 in a battle with the main Japanese army in China. And so, as a choice, as an alternative, in a way to prevent that and end the war, it seems to me that the decision which ushered in the atomic age, for good or for bad, was perhaps the most momentous decision that any president has ever made.
Paul Porter.
Well, Mr. Smith, I would have a sort of proprietary interest in the Truman Doctrine in Greece, having been sent there by the president in 1947. At that time, you will recall, the Marcos guerrilla activity was threatening to drop the Iron Curtain down to the Mediterranean and to the Suez. And Truman took a position that the Greek economy should be rehabilitated. And based upon a report that myself and my staff made, he announced to Congress on March the 17th, 1947, the Greek-Turkish Doctrine, which is known as the Truman Doctrine. I must add that it did not fulfill our expectations, because most of the funds which had been earmarked for reconstruction and rehabilitation were siphoned off to the military for actual military activities. But nonetheless, I think that decision was one that he thought was one of his great decisions.